Golf Smarter number 71 for April 24th, 2007.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
LPGA Midwest Section Teacher of the Year, Suzanne Noblet.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and thanks for listening to the Golf Smarter podcast. On today's program, Kenny Nicholson of Edwin Watts Golf will answer questions on Sky Caddy versus rangefinders, and we'll get into a rousing discussion on whether the USGA's efforts to limit distance is a good thing or not, and we're going to ask you to participate in this conversation. Our guest today is Suzanne Noblet. A Golf Smarter listener requested that I interview Suzanne after hearing her speak on the mental side of the game. He and his wife were considering taking private lessons from her and wanted to know more. So he sent in his request. I did a little research, contacted Suzanne. She did her research on us, and then agreed to have the discussion. Suzanne has been recognized as a top LPGA instructor by various publications, and she contributes articles to Golf for Women magazine. Golf Smarter is brought to you in part by the Bird Golf Academy. Ultimate teachers on ultimate courses brings ultimate results. Take your game to the next level and sign up now for the Bird Golf Academy by clicking on their link at golfsmarterpodcast.com. All listeners of the Golf Smarter Podcast receive a 10% discount to the Bird Golf Academy. Welcome, Suzanne.
Hello.
Looking through your bio, there's a couple of questions I have to ask. Tell me the Elvis story.
Oh, the Elvis story, yes. My dad grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, and when he graduated from college and was out in the military, one of his first professional jobs was with Ford Motor Company in Memphis, and he was in the main dealership there in Memphis, and it was right after Elvis had gotten out of the service, and he came in, and he was to pick up a special Lincoln that he had ordered, but it wasn't available yet. So he had to speak to my dad. My dad was the one he had to speak to in order to get permission to borrow the showroom Lincoln that was on the floor until his arrived. And my dad got to meet with him, and he said that he was the most polite, genuine person that he's probably ever met. Very kind and a good person.
And did he get a picture with him?
I think he has a picture with him somewhere.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, you
got to
pull that one out and put it back up on the wall.
Yeah. And actually, my grandmother met him, too, twice. Oh. She used to work in this. Yeah, she used to work in this Bible bookstore in Memphis. And they were closing. She got a phone call during closing hours, and the voice asked if they could stay open a little bit longer, and she said, well, we're closing, and the voice said, well, Mr. Presley was hoping that he could come in and do some shopping for some friends and relatives, and they said, oh, absolutely, you know, and he came in and shopped after hours, and she said the same thing. He was so polite and just a genuine person.
I guess in the 50s and 60s, when you're in Memphis and somebody said Mr. Presley, everybody jumped.
Oh, yeah.
And you're related to Lyndon Johnson?
I am. He is actually a distant cousin of mine. Mm-hmm.
But never got a chance to meet or be at the same family function or anything?
No, never had that pleasure. My mom's side of the family was one of the first families to settle the state of Texas before it became a state, actually. And the organization is called Daughters of Texas. So, but we're related.
That's so cool. Well, it's been great to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, you know, that's enough, right?
Exactly. No, this is, we're doing our American Idol version of Golf Smarter today.
Yeah.
So what song are you going to sing? All right. So in your method of teaching golf, and congratulations, I see that you've been, you were named once one of the instructor, top 50 instructors of the year.
Yes, for Golf Range Magazine in 2006. Yes, I was very privileged to be considered part of that select group. Very honored.
That's great. That's great. How is it for, and I hate if this sounds sexist at all, but how well do men receive being taught by a woman?
You know, I actually have more men clients than I do women clients. And I've just been very fortunate. I'm very easygoing, and I don't try to make anything difficult. I try to make things as simple as possible. I don't get upset, and I explain that no question is stupid, and please don't hesitate to ask, and we always try to relate the information to activities or sports that they've previously played, and they just seem to be more comfortable.
Well, I'm so happy to hear that no question is stupid, because I'm more at ease now talking to you. I was nervous, like, that was really a dumb question, Fred.
No.
Good, good. How, in your teaching method, how much time do you spend on the mental aspect of the game versus the technical or mechanical side of the game?
Well, the mental game, you know, if you asked probably a non-golfer, because they hear this too, they would probably say, well, the mental game is 90%. And it's definitely a great part of it. I always try to incorporate a little bit of it in the lesson, certainly in the visualization, in the pre-shot routine. And when I have my clients step away from the ball, I have them begin their pre-shot routine with picturing their idea of what the perfect shot should look like that they're about ready to play. Because I explain to them that, you know, that's a form of commitment. And if they're able to picture that perfect shot and then step in and address the ball with that positive, perfect shot in their head, all that's left is aim it and play. Because when we step up to play our shot, we don't want a lot of garbage, if you want to say, floating around in our heads like, oh no, there's out of bounds, there's water, there's deep rough, there's, you know, because we don't want to be bothered with that. If we get the garbage in our head, back off, start over. We don't want to plan it to death before we play our shot. But if we can commit before we're about ready to play, we're much more apt to play the shot that we want.
So true. And then after the pre-shot routine, then the shot, it just so happens that we have a lousy shot afterwards and we start beating ourselves up, and that we carry that with us. Do you have a post-shot routine as well? How do you deal with that? How do you say, oh, I'm terrible?
Well,
or avoid
you know, there are a few ways to deal with that. Number one, let's step away and let's take another swing without a ball. Rehearsal swing, and rehearse it the way that we wanted to play it. That way you're not leaving that spot with that negative thought of, ah, I missed it, you know, it's over. The other thing is, you know, the most important shot that you're about ready to play, that's it. That's the most important shot, the one you're about ready to play, not the one before, not the one after, not one three shots away from here. It's in that moment that we want to stay.
What they say, that the hardest shot in golf is the next one.
Mm-hmm. Well, golf's kind of a game of chess. And all we're doing is just setting ourselves up. And if we can stay in the moment and focus on that one shot, then things tend to fall in place.
But life is going on. There's so much. A round of golf can take you 4 hours, and you're only hitting the ball for a total of 10 minutes. How do we stay focused? What kind of tips can you provide us?
Yeah, I think the best thing to do is to kind of take little nature breaks, if you want to call them, on your way up to the ball. Be focused on the shot that you're about ready to play. Okay, after that shot's played, then take a little mental vacation. Look around, look at the trees, look at, if you like to fish, think about fishing. If you like to hike, think about hiking. And that way you're not totally focusing on golf the entire time. You need to be able to pull yourself in and out. And then when you get up to the ball or you're walking to your next shot, then it's time to start focusing. I mean, let's look at, here's a perfect example. Lee Trevino, laugh, joke around when he's played his shot, but when he gets ready to play his shot, he's all business. You know, he plays the shot, shot's over, and he's loose and joking around again. Not all players are going to be like that, but that's a perfect example of how to stay in the moment. And after you've taken care of business, take a little break. If we concentrated a whole solid 4 hours straight without any little mental vacations like that, you'd have a really bad headache.
Ow, my head.
Yeah, and the shots wouldn't be as good either.
No, and you probably wouldn't enjoy yourself as much.
No, and golf shouldn't be a game of pain. It should be something fun, something enjoyable, not dread. And, you know, we just need to take those little mental vacations. And I like to call it TiVo your shot. You know, when you stand behind and you're ready to play that shot, visually picture the perfect shot, what you think the perfect shot would be. To hit, and then step on in there, and if you're committed to your routine and you're committed to that shot, then, you know, there's a very good chance that that's what's going to happen.
There's a wide range of players that I've been introduced to while doing this program. People email me and tell me how they're doing, and it's hard to address everybody in all this, but I do know that there are a number of people who are new to the game, coming back to the game, especially not just after the long winter break, but after a number of years. You know, if you have a kid, you just can't play golf that often anymore. You know, you played when you were a kid, now you've got a career. And as people come back and they're coming into it as a fresh sport, there's a lot that's going on in their mind every time they step up to hit the ball. Especially if they've recently had a lesson or two. There's all these different things going on in their head that they have to do. How important is it to clear your mind before you address the ball? Or is it important to clear your mind?
It's huge. It is huge. I like to think of it kind of, well, you know, when a client comes to me, like I mentioned earlier, I always try to find out, what other sports, what other activities do you do or play? So once I find out what these are, then we try to relate these to golf so that it doesn't seem so foreign. Let's say you played basketball and you were a really good basketball player or a baseball player. And we're having a lesson and I say, Fred, you're standing at the plate too long. And you say, but I'm ready, I'm ready. I said, Fred, we can't be standing at the plate all the time while the pitching coach is running out to the pitcher and he's discussing how he's going to strike you out and everything. But I'm ready, I'm ready, and you're in ready mode here. And as long as you're at the plate, you're going to be thinking. And in baseball, there's no time to think. Here comes the ball, you just swing. You just react to it. So if you get the garbage, if you want to call it, floating around in your head, like, how's my posture? Where's my ball position? Oh, where's my weight? You know, all this stuff. And I see that. I pull you right out of there immediately and then have you go through the routine again, because the longer you're at the plate, the worse it's going to be. You're going to strike out. Same thing if your sport was basketball. You know, if you think about the basketball players in the NCAA tournament just recently, you never saw any of them stand at the line the entire time while the ref was wiping the ball off and while the other coaches were sending players in and out. What was that player doing? He was walking around. And then when the referee wanted him, he went over to the line. But he didn't go to the line until he had to. And the reason why is because the longer he's at that line or the longer you're at home plate ready for the pitch to come, the more you start to think. We don't want to be up there longer than we have to. That's why it's so important to have a pre-shot routine and to visualize your shot. You know, the free throw shooters, they visualize their shot while they're going through their routine. You even see them take these air shots, you know, while the ref still has the ball. And then they step up there. They've already programmed it in their heads, and they shoot or they swing the bat, and it goes. Because I'm not going to let you stand in that, you know, at the home plate or at the free throw line longer than you have to, because if you do, you'll start thinking, and then it's over.
So true. Yeah. Well, it brings to mind that scene in the movie Bull Durham, where he steps up to the plate, and you hear him, his mind going. You hear him saying to himself, come on, meat, get it out of your head. Get it out of your head.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that scene, but it made me think. Also, what you said made me think of Shaquille O'Neal. Does he spend too much time thinking about missing the shot when he's going to take a free throw?
I don't know about that. It kind of makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And so what are the mental tendencies that golfers have?
You know, everyone's different, and everyone learns differently. So I wouldn't say that there are specific ones that everyone's going to have, because we all approach the game differently. But I will say that, you know, my clients and people that come to me for help, the things that tend to come up are, I'm playing in this business outing, and I've never, you know, I haven't really played a lot of rounds, and I'm really nervous, and especially on the first tee, everyone's looking at me. I don't want to look like I don't know what I'm doing, or, you know, I'm out here. I do really well on the court, on the range, on the practice tee. But when I go to the golf course, it's like I'm having an out-of-body experience. You know, what's this club and who am I? You know, and I can't seem to get it together. What is it? You know, those are a few things that we run into. But you know, I tell them, it's like with the practice situation. You know, the reason why a lot of people tend to have trouble transferring really good practice to the golf course is because they don't practice like they should be playing. And what I mean by that is when you go to the golf course, all of a sudden you're implementing a routine. You know, you're doing things that you don't do when you practice. Like all of a sudden you're taking into account wind and, you're having to aim somewhere specific. You know, unfortunately, when we go to the practice tee, this is what I see. You know, I see people, I call them raking hitters. You know, they get up there and they rake a ball over, hit it. They don't let go of the club a lot of times, reach down, rake another one over, hit it. And they're not aiming at a specific target. They're not even going through a routine. Like we said, a lot of them don't even take their hands off the club, so they're not focusing on anything. And, you know, routine is important. You've got to get back. You've got to go through the same routine that you do on the golf course. And if you do that, you're able to carry over practice to play so that when you cross the street to the golf course, your game goes with you. It's not back there on the practice tee somewhere.
For someone I've never met before, how come I feel like you've been watching me? totally guilty, completely guilty of that. And I think what I end up doing is I'm just trying to get a good stroke in there. I'm trying to get one that feels right. Oh, okay, that one felt good. Now I'll change my clubs.
Yeah.
You know, instead of trying to get the full package, the good swing, connect well, good ball flight, you know, in being comfortable at address, not being too tight, getting a nice breath before, all the different things. And when I get one, okay, I'm fine. Now I can move on. And that's, I'm raking hit, huh?
Well, I don't know. I'd have to see it for sure. I'm not going to tell you that you are. But I can tell you that the raking hitters, anybody can be, you know, the raking hitters are whackers. And anybody can be a whacker because whackers are hackers.
Yeah, now you're talking.
And the reason why I say that is because they're not practicing with a purpose. They're just going out and they're buying the Gondo bucket of balls, and they're thinking, how many can I hit in 30 minutes and get my money's worth? You know, if I hit all these balls, I'm going to get my money's worth. Well, you know, what about if you get, let's say, a small bucket of balls that has maybe 40, 50 balls in it, and let's pick out a target, let's visualize the shot you want to play. You know, if you like to take a rehearsal swing, take that rehearsal swing, step on in there, line it up, you know, and just have a clear head and let's play our shot. Because a lot of times people, when they get to the golf course, or when they get to the golf course, they tell me, I'm thinking too much. I get over the ball and I just can't focus. How do I do that? Well, you won't get efficient with it until you do practice like you play. And, you know, that's why it's so important that when you're at the practice tee, to do that, to start implementing it, you know, especially if you're working with a professional who's helping you with your game, you're working on technique, but you also have to work on this. You're learning a new skill or refining a skill that you already have learned, and you're making adjustments. Well, when you get up there to the plate to play your shot, like the batter at the plate, do you still have all these refinements going through your head? No, that's not the place to do them. It's in the batter's box, you know, away from the plate. Step away from the ball. Don't even get close to the ball, because the closer you are, the more tense you're going to get. Plan the technique back there. Let's say you're working on weight shift. You know, take your practice swing or do your drill that your teaching professional is having you work on behind the ball. And then once you do that, give yourself a nice big check because you've successfully planned it. And then step up to the plate aim the club, and then just let it happen. But we have to be committed when we get in there. We need to practice with intention and not tension. Not be a whacker.
I want to flesh that out a little bit. Did you say practice with tension and without tension?
No, intention.
Oh, intention. Okay.
Intention. And attention.
Yeah. T-E-N-T-I-O-N, not T-E-N-S-I-O-N.
Right.
And I was like, right. Wait a minute. This is, I've never heard this before.
Yeah. Oh, it's earth-shattering. No.
Because
intention
you
and attention.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Tell me about some of the tools that you use as an instructor, not only technological tools, video, whatnot, but also mental tools that you use in your lessons.
Well, I had a company approach me about a little over a year ago out of the Carolinas called the Mental Golf Workshop. And the program was developed by a gentleman that used to be the coach at the University of South Carolina. And, you know, they said, we'd like for you to look at using our program with your clients. And I said, well, I don't want to do that until I find out more about it and I take the profile myself, because I want to make sure, before I even offer it to my clients, it has to work. So they said, sure, no problem, you can take it. So I took it. Took me about 20 minutes. Took it online. And I got the results. And what this profile does is it gives you really a blueprint about your game and how you look at things. How you prepare for the round, your course management, what your tendencies are, your mental tendencies when you play shots, your golf temperament, things like that.
It's not just a personality type profile, overall personality. It's your golf personality?
Well, the way it was explained to me by the developer of the program was that it was based on the DISC profile system. But it is geared to golf, specifically to golf. So, you know, I took it, and I've taken other golf-related mental tests, if you want to call them that, and I didn't feel that they were accurate. Well, this one hit me dead on. I mean, it was down the board accurate.
It's kind of scary sometimes.
Yeah, but in a good way. And then, you know, I called him back up and I said, okay, I'm ready. You know, this checked out with me. I think you definitely have something here, and I'd like to offer it to my clients. Well, every client that's taken it is absolutely agreed. You know, at first they're like, a mental what? And, you know, I just explained to them that, hey, this is a blueprint for you and I to help you reach your game goals faster. And, in fact, recently I've been working with some junior players. I have adults and kids take this, but I've had some junior players take this. And, you know, the parents look over the profiles once the kids get them. They get the results right away. And I had a mom who doesn't play golf tell me, this is so my son. This is just so my son. She just, you know, and I said, yeah, it's pretty neat how accurate it is, isn't it? And she said, oh, it's just so him, you know. She totally agreed with it.
Wow.
And these kids, like everyone of my other clients that have taken it, they see the results because, you know, now stuff makes sense to them. Well, I know I have trouble with the shot. Well, now I know why I have trouble with it, because I look at it like this.
Uh-huh.
And it gives you the feedback that you need. I get the feedback I need so that we can go directly to the problem or the tendency, and that we can make the necessary adjustments that we need to make to correct it, instead of going through, you know, let's say two or three lessons before we hit on it. I mean, we kind of have an idea, but we don't know why. Or someone else can take the test, take the profile, and they get total complete surprises. And what I mean by that is they see things that's like, oh, man, I didn't realize I was doing that, but now it makes sense, because if I'm doing that, that's what's leading to these higher scores. So it's really proved to be an effective tool.
And that can be found on the web?
Yes, it can. You can go to my website, www.noblet, N as in Nancy, O, B as in book, L, E, T as in Tom, T as in terrific, golf, golf.com. And you can click on take the mental profile. And it takes you 20 minutes to take it. You get the results right away. I get emailed the results. And, you know, here's another nice thing. Whether or not you decide to be a client of mine or to work with me, you have the results. You can now take it to your professional and say, hey, here I am. Let's fix it. Yeah. It's a direct blueprint.
Well, good, because I think our listener in the Netherlands or in France might not be able to contact you directly to.
Yeah.
But they can still take this
mental
profile. And who is it that developed the mental golf workshop?
His name is Bobby Foster.
I think we should try to get him on the show.
I think so, too.
All right. Well, again, it's nobletgolf.com, NobletGolf.com. And Suzanne Noblet, we thank you so much for spending this time. This was really fascinating stuff. I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you.
Do you have a question about specific golf gear or are baffled about what to look for in a category of golf products? Kenny Nicholson, the technical specialist at EdwinWattsGolf.com, would like to help. And if we use the question that you submit on our show, you'll receive a free Golf Smarter Edwin Watts Golf Hat. To submit your question, listen carefully, because we have a new way. Go to GolfSmarterPodcast.com and click on the button labeled Ask Kenny. Ask Kenny is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf and EdwinWattsGolf.com, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Good morning, Kenny.
Good morning, Fred. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well, thank you. We've got some interesting questions, but I want to start one of the questions with the letter that we received from Timothy Carr. And this amuses me. I you know, this is just a podcast. This isn't life, right?
Right.
But Timothy wrote and said, I came across Golf Smarter a while ago on iTunes. I downloaded one and listened to it and loved it so much. I downloaded every single one and listened to them all, one after another, in sequential order, so as not to miss a single episode. You have been my driving companion every day on my commute home. I am almost depressed now that I have to come to the latest episode and have to wait for the next one. What will my drive be like now? Wait! I can start from the beginning again! I know I need the refresher anyway!
Good for him.
Yeah, good for us. Thank you, Timothy. But he did have a question. He said, with all the talk about U-grooves versus V-grooves for mid-level to higher handicappers, does this really make a difference, or should I go out and buy a wedge with U-grooves before they stop making them?
There was a study years ago that found that U-grooves versus V-grooves was you know, there was no big difference there, not enough to their finding basically said it was inconsequential. There was not enough difference to make a rule change. The USGA spent the last 18 months studying grooves, and they found that the better player has a distinct advantage with U-grooved irons and wedges over V-grooves. They're able to keep the ball on the green more, basically, especially from the rough is where they found the study. They're able to create more spin with the U-groove iron or wedge, and they're able to stop it on the green. That doesn't mean that there's a change fixing to happen. It means that there probably is going to be a change sometime in the near future, you know, regarding grooves on golf clubs. The simple answer to his question is yes, U-grooves do create more spin on golf balls versus V-grooves. Does that happen for everybody? I think swing has a lot to do with that as well, you know, how much club head speed you generate and how much, you know, you hit, you know, down on the ball and take a divot that creates spin, obviously. So, yeah, I mean, my clubs and wedges have U-grooves, and I do see a distinct advantage over a V-groove club, absolutely.
But they're not going to stop making them?
Not right now. The USGA is saying that there might be a rule change coming soon. There hasn't been a decision made on that. They're just letting the manufacturers know, hey, look, there is an advantage. We know that now through our study, and there might be a rule change coming.
What is the process of, and this is my question, maybe I'll get a hat, what is the process the USGA goes through when they make a decision about clubs and the technology?
It's typically not a spur-of-the-moment process. There's a lot of study that goes into it to decide whether or not there is an advantage, whether you talk about what coefficient of restitution, where they put a limit on spring effect of golf clubs. You know, they set a limit on that. That was a big difference in golf technology. And now the new buzzword is moment of inertia, how much twisting on impact the golf club has. Those are distinct advantages. You know, if you're able to keep the ball in play more on off-center hits, then that's a huge advantage. I think grooves is one where it had to take a little more study involved. I don't think it affects the majority of the average golfers out there. I think it affects, you know, the better players out there, which, I, you know, in my opinion, the groove issue is not that big of an issue for the majority of the people out there. I think a guy that's hitting, you know, a six iron into a green, and he's able to stop the ball, you know, just a little bit more than a V-groove club, then it makes the club, you know, makes the round of golf more enjoyable. You know, but that's not the way that they look at it. They have to look at it from a pro standpoint as well. There's not two sets of rules. There's not one set of rules for the pros and one set of rules for the amateurs. So we all have to play by the same rules, no matter what your ability is.
But we have to play by the pros' rules.
That's correct.
Well, you know, I don't know if it's a devil's advocate or just being an idiot here, but why would they care? I mean, if a guy is going to drive the ball 400 yards, that's going to create more attention for the sport from the average fan, isn't it?
Everybody can have their own opinion about that. I think, in my opinion as well, I'll play the devil's advocate like you. I think it would be enjoyable to see a guy trying to reach a green that's 375 yards long or 400
Absolutely.
Yards long with a driver. You know, there's a quote in there from Bubba Watson, swing hard and go find it. You know, that's
can we use that at the end of the show?
Yeah, I mean, that's the way that, I mean, he's a bomber, obviously. He's the longest driver on tour. But, you know, it's exciting to see those guys just basically grip it and rip it and see where it goes. But
if they grip it and hit it straight. I mean,
exactly.
I just think that would generate more interest, more business, fill up more golf courses, make more sales of golf clubs. Isn't that the ultimate goal? I mean, is the USGA trying to fight better business, more business?
Yeah, I could plead the fifth on that question. But in some cases, I think, you know, I look at it and go, you know, I just don't get it. Mm-hmm. You know, because you're talking about the mass consumer out there is the one that it's affecting the most. You know, if they restrict you know, grooves on clubs, is it really going to make that big of a difference to where it affects, you know, a very small percentage of golfers? And that's what their main focus, you know, unfortunately sometimes is on a very small minority, which is the pros out there. I think that it would generate a lot more interest if they restricted some of the restrictions that they have. But you know, they have to look at it from a different standpoint. If you go back to look at when guys started to hit the ball further, I'm talking about on the PGA Tour. What was the first thing you saw? You saw courses being redesigned. You know, primarily look at Augusta. Look how much change was made to that golf course and other golf courses. You know, they wanted to basically driver-proof the golf course. So anytime there was, a change, the USGA said, okay, we have to, you know, not minimize it, but we do have to put restrictions out there.
Well, then let me ask you this. I'm sorry to interrupt, but then you have a Masters where nobody's breaking par. Is that good for the sport?
You look at it from different standpoints. I think that to see a pro go out there and struggle is not good,
right?
In my opinion.
I agree.
To see guys go out there and the average score on Thursday and Friday's round was like 74 to 76, something like that. To me, that's not enjoyable. I'd rather see a guy go out there, and shoot low numbers and see a lot of birdies and eagle opportunities. If you've been to Augusta and been down on Amen Corner 11, 12, and 13 and hear the roars in years past, they were talking about this year how it was just so quiet back there.
Interesting.
You know, so...
Well, you know, you look back, and people will talk more about Tiger being 21 under after four rounds than him being plus two
right,
over four rounds.
I think you're exactly correct.
You know, this could actually be a very interesting debate that we can get a couple of people online together and have this conversation. I think it would be very fiery and really compelling.
We
should try to do that sometime.
Yeah, I think it would be fun.
Yeah.
I think everybody out there would enjoy to hear the different philosophy on why we do this or what's good for the game or what have you. So
let's talk to your boss. Let's get somebody on the phone here that we can get a couple of us online and just debate this if it's really good for the sport or not.
Yeah, exactly. I think it would be fun.
Interesting. Anyway, Tim Carr of Bothell, Washington, we're going to send you a hat so you can wear it on your commute home and tell everyone, hey, I'm listening to Golf Smarter, but you have to promise you have to wear the hat out on the golf course as well. All right, we got one more question here. That comes from Tammy Pick in Wellsville, Pennsylvania. And she says, could you ask Kenny to talk about the pros and cons of Sky Caddy versus the more traditional rangefinders?
There's a couple ways to look at that. There's Sky Caddy, and now there's also Golf Logic, which is made by Garmin, which is another GPS unit.
iGolf?
Correct, yeah.
iGolf, yeah.
Exactly. Garmin's big, obviously, because if you fish, you see Garmin units. If you air travel or a pilot, you see the majority of your GPS systems in their Garmin. So they're
very big. And if you rent a car, you can get a Garmin.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so the difference between GPS versus, say, Bushnell, which is a laser rangefinder, GPS is going to give you typically exact yardages to certain points on the golf course, whether it's front, center, and back of the greens, where bunkers are. And you can also mark whenever you tee off with the Bushnell. You can mark the spot where you tee, and when you get to the ball, it'll tell you how far you've hit that shot. So it's good if you're wanting to measure iron shots, if you're out there practicing and you want to know exactly how far you're hitting your 9-iron. You can hit a bunch of 9-irons. You can mark where you hit from, and then you can go out there and pick them up, and you can tell, you know, hey, this is how far I hit a 9-iron. So it's very good for that. Where the Bushnells come into play and are very good, is you can, you know, it's basically point and shoot. You look at a target, look through the Bushnell, put the crosshairs on the target, and you press the button, and it gives you an exact yardage to a location. So if the GPS doesn't have coordinates for where the bunkers are or where the edge of the water is, the Bushnell is great for, a quick find for that yardage. Each of them has a certain purpose and are very good. I wouldn't say that I prefer one over the other because I have both and I use both. You know, the Bushnell is good because you can use it for other activities. If you hunt, you can obviously use it for collecting yardage that way. There's certain ways to look at it. The GPS is fairly easy to use. You do have to have a computer to be able to download courses.
And you have to pay the subscription.
You do have to pay the subscription. The Sky Golf, they have courses that they're called Pro Marked, where a pro actually goes out there and marks the golf course for you, and you can download that. Or they have certain courses that are marked by amateurs. The Golf Logic made by Garmin is actually done through Google Earth. They actually mark the course through using Google or Earth. And if your course is not on that system, you can simply send them an email, tell them the name of your golf course, and within 7 or 10 days, they actually have that course available for download. So it's a pretty neat process, and I can tell you that we used Bolt on the golf course one day to try to verify that that it was capable of doing that through Google Earth, and I was surprised that the yardages were within 1 or 2 yards on every hole. So that tells you that yes, they're able to do that.
Well, and of course, Golf Smarter utilizes Google Earth as well when we talk about golf courses. I do have to say that I am going to be going on a golf trip fairly soon, and of the courses that I'm playing, half of them I can't load my Sky Caddy information onto because they don't exist. So that tells you something.
Yeah,
if you travel a lot, it's a crapshoot.
Yeah, and the one thing about the Sky Caddy, I'll tell you too, that's kind of a plus where the Golf Logic is not, you can actually program your own course. So as you're out there playing one day, you take your Sky Caddy with you, and you can actually mark the course. When you get done putting, you can go and mark the front, center, and back of the greens real quick. It takes you an extra 15 or 30 seconds per hole. But after you mark it, it's in your GPS for the whole time.
So
it's easy to do by yourself. You do not have to pay a subscription to use that product. If you want to download certain courses, you do have to pay a subscription.
Well, right, but with the Bushnell, when you're out on the course, you can use it right at that time.
It immediately.
Right, on the Sky Caddy.
Put the baddies in.
Like, I did with my Sky Caddy, I used it on a course that I play frequently just to see, hey, can I program this thing? And I did, but that means that, first of all, you can't use it if you're traveling. Because if you're generally just going to play a course one time and they don't have it, you're out of luck. And then if you're playing a course over and over again, you generally don't need a Sky Caddy. You pretty much learn the course, right?
That is correct.
So they're great. I really like my Sky Caddy. It's definitely helped me when I'm approaching the green. But would I buy another one? I don't know. Anyway, so that was an interesting conversation. Thank you, Kenny Nicholson.
You're welcome. Thank you for the question.
And, we are doing a giveaway right now that we should let everybody know that they can join in on this one because we're giving away a Callaway travel bag, right? The Fusion Callaway travel bag. And the entry is deadline is April 30th. The winner is going to be announced next week on the program of May 1st, 2007. And in an effort to make entering this drawing easier for everybody, here's the latest way to enter. Go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the word contest just below the Edwin Watts Golf banner. Once you're there, fill out the information. You're ready to go. No emails necessary. And every time that we do a new prize, we're going to change it. So if you've entered before, when you go back a second time, all the information's going to be there. All you have to do is just fill out the verification code and submit, and your entry will be there. And if you don't get to listen to every single episode, then you can check in and still enter the contest. It's the easiest way we found to make it work, and the reaction has been very good. The contest page makes it a lot easier for you to check out what the giveaway is, even if you don't get a chance to listen to the show. So please enter for the Fusion Callaway travel bag, valued at $240, and we'll announce the winner on the next show. We do make it easy because it's fun to give things away. Absolutely. Kenny, we'll talk to you next week.
All right, Fred. Take care.
You know what? Regarding that conversation that Kenny and I just had about the USGA, what do you think? I don't really care if we get controversial here. Hey, we're just a podcast, right? But we can make our voice heard. Do you think the USGA should limit the distance of golf clubs or golf balls? Should they care? Is it good for the golf business if they limit it? Or is it bad for the golf business? I really want to know what you think about this. There's something that's burning me up here that thinks that we can make something happen if we let people know what we think. Why are they doing this? I don't know. So please, send word to me. But while you're entering the contest, you're going to see a complete list of the great prizes provided by Edwin Watts Golf and who won each time. And while you're there, check out the rest of our new website, smarterpodcast.com. Remember, it's plural, podcasts. And at the end of today's show, I'll play you a promo for the Good Dog Podcast, very similar to Golf Smarter in the fact that we get experts to give us advice on how to be good dog owners. So please check it out, gooddogpodcast.com, and of course, at iTunes. This week's closing quote comes from Dave Vitoe of Boise, Idaho. Dave's a big Freddie Couples fan. And once after winning a tournament, Freddie was so happy that the camera caught a tear of joy streaming down his cheek. When asked about it, Freddie said, "I always get emotional when good things happen to good people." Now, if you have any questions, comments, quotes, or requests, we've made that easier too. And if you want to join in on this debate, click on the Hey Fred button at GolfSmarterPodcast.com.
The Good Dog Podcast is for people who are passionate about dogs.
I love my dogs.
I interview veterinarians, dog behaviorists, and a whole range of experts who offer tips and insights.
A good German Shepherd makes decisions. It will say, well, you know, I know the light just changed, but on the other hand, there's a very quiet Prius coming your way, and so I'm going to stop, whereas labs have a tendency to just follow rules.
You'll hear about some amazing canines who help their owners to be safe, and in some cases, alive.
Sometimes diabetics will test, and they'll still be at 100 saying, I'm not going low, what are you talking about? And the dogs let them know before they even feel it.
And you'll pick up ideas for solving a host of challenges.
Within a week, you're going to have a dog that is calm, he lies down quietly, he's just going to be a totally different dog.
I'm Joanne Green. Please subscribe to the Good Dog Podcast, found in iTunes or at smarterpodcasts.com.